Welcome back to another episode of In the Money. I'm Roberta King, a Vice President Branch Leader with Fidelity Investments, and I'm looking forward to today's conversation with Tony Zhang. He is Chief Strategist of Options Play, and Tony is also a frequent CNBC guest. Tony, welcome back to another show today. It's good to be with you.
Thank you so much, Roberta. It's great to be back.
So, viewers, today is Thursday, December 11th, 2025. And of course, we all continue to have a watchful eye on the markets and how they're responding to key economic data, as well as that Fed meeting yesterday. Today, Tony, we're curious to hear your observations. So let's get today's conversation started with your macroeconomic view. What has your attention right now?
Yeah, thank you so much, Roberta. As you said, all eyes this week were on the FOMC meeting, specifically with regards to the rate cut decision. Now, the Fed delivered as expected, the third consecutive rate cut. However, what is less certain is going to be what the path for rate cuts are going to look like in 2026, specifically the first half. It's interesting that we saw three dissident votes for this rate cut, which is the most we've seen since 2019. And what's interesting is that, we had two governors vote on holding rates steady, and one governor actually vote on a bigger rate cut than what was delivered. Instead of 25 basis points, 50 basis points. That's a pretty divergent view as far as where interest rates should be going forward. Now, Chairman Powell himself described yesterday's move as part of a continued normalization aimed at stabilizing the labor market. And what's interesting for me is that he's focusing on the labor market, suggesting that the Fed has, at least for now, done enough to cushion the employment risks while keeping flexibility going into 2026. If you look at the S&P 500 yesterday, initially we saw a positive gain on the S&P 500 on this move because it was initially taken as a less hawkish cut than what markets were expecting. Markets were expecting that we were not going to see any rate cuts in the first half of 2026. But his language sort of left things open potentially for another rate cut in the first half of 2026. And that's part of why we saw the S&P trade higher and the two-year yields drift lower to around that 3.5% level. So the reaction sort of signals that the Fed remains cautious, but is remaining fairly optimistic with regards to growth expectations for next year, remaining fairly optimistic that the labor market is not going to fall apart, that they are doing everything they can to support the labor market, and that inflation, especially with regards to concerns around tariffs, was going to largely be kept in check and likely peak in the first quarter of 2026. All of that is within kind of this macro backdrop that's remains fairly complicated because the Fed is navigating a fairly difficult situation. You have unemployment ticking higher, currently standing around 4.4%, and there's signs that that's cooling further. And then you also have inflation that's remained fairly elevated at that 2.8 level, which is above the 2% target that the Fed is mandated in terms of what they're expected to do. So it's the Fed is kind of between a hard rock and is kind of in this hard position right now to navigate, where the labor market is continuing to soften, yet inflation's not quite coming in. So the equity market so far is still remaining fairly cautious but resilient at the moment. You see the S&P 500 hovering just below that major double top 6850 level here to the upside, and there's signs that we could potentially see a breakout here to those all-time highs, and that would be a pretty strong bullish signal here for the markets heading into the end of December. On the flip side, you have some downside support around that $6,500 level here, which is, if we get below that level, there is some concerns that we could see some major moves here to the downside. You have some major support, some minor support, sorry, around that $6,800 level that we really want to see the markets hold over the next couple of trading sessions above that level in order for it to have a shot at cracking that double top and resuming the so-called Santa Claus rally. that we seem to have embarked on since the beginning of December. But I think what's interesting to note here is that the real movement here is actually not coming from the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ 100. It's actually coming from small caps. You know, despite the fact that the S&P is largely flat today, small caps is up, you know, over 1%. If you look at the Russell 2000, it is breaking out to new all-time highs. It is outperforming the S&P 500 over the last couple of weeks. And this is actually showing us that's really where the rotation is currently happening right now. And that's really where I think investors should actually be paying attention, is in some of the sectors like healthcare and small caps versus kind of the large cap growth names that have been driving the markets here over the last couple of years. That's where we're seeing some of that rotation under the surface. And that's really where I think some of the potential gains going forward is likely going to come, especially as you see the VIX drift back into that 16 to 17% range. It just means that, you know, at the moment, the big cap name still remains fairly uncertain, that there's still potential pockets of volatility that we might see over the next few weeks, especially since next week is going to be a big week for catch up on economic data. You have payrolls data, you have inflation data, retail sales data. These are all data that were delayed in October during the government shutdown that we're going to start getting some of that data here next week. That is going to be potentially a main driver of sentiment going forward. So I think that's what we're going to have to watch very closely next week.
Thank you, Tony. Definitely, we're looking forward to seeing more data as it comes out. I do have two questions for you based on your comments. So the first is, you showed us a chart just a few moments ago on SPX. Curious to know, when we're looking at some of those support levels, if it reverses below that recent support that you highlighted, is there a roadmap that you've considered for downside targets and where folks can use or think about as triggers to de-risk their portfolios?
Yeah, absolutely. So like I said, there's a minor support around 6,800. That's been the support level that's been holding over the last, call it week and a half. If that level were to break, our downside target here is closer around 6,500 to the downside. We're talking about roughly about 5% in terms of risk to the downside if we break below that $6,800 level. The major support here comes in around 6,550. And that's been a level that's been in place pretty much since the beginning of September. If we manage to break below 6,550, that's really where we open the door down to around 6,000 here to the downside. And that's another 7% further from where that would be if it breaks below that level. So those are the two major support levels that I would be paying attention to, and the targets below that if we break those levels.
Thank you for that. And I suppose my second question is more of an optimistic question. And conversely, it's around your comments around the small cap outperformance. Can you talk about what else might be driving that? And is it durable now that the Fed's already met?
Yeah, those are fantastic questions. So, you know, to answer your first question, you know, the reason that we think small caps are starting to see that rotation into small caps is a couple of factors. One, it's just the interest rate environment tends to be favorable for small caps. You have a lower interest rate environment. You have a lot of small caps that have a fair amount of debt that they're managing right now. And, you know, record number of companies that actually do not generate enough net income to cover or service their interest payments. So those names tend to be far more sensitive to even small movements in the interest rate. And that's why we're seeing the small caps kind of rally a higher amount than the large cap names on the back of lower interest rates. So that's one of the primary drivers of small caps. The second thing is simply valuation. Small caps are trading at some of the lowest valuations we've seen, at least relative to the large cap names. And this is really the market playing a little bit of catch up. There's certainly a lot of concern, and we're seeing that in many of the tech growth, specifically AI names, with regards to valuations. And we're seeing investors question a lot more kind of the high value names that have been driving growth over the last couple of years, kind of potentially rebalance their portfolios into names that make a lot more sense from a valuation perspective, as the upside looks more limited in large cap growth and looks far more compelling in small caps and value names. So that's part of why I think we're seeing that move here to the upside in terms of small caps. And then, you know, the second part to your question with regards to Sorry, I'm blanking on the second part of your question,
It was
actually.
about, is it durable now? And I think you addressed a bit with post the Fed decision, and you mentioned the interest rates, that small caps can continue to outperform.
Yeah, so historically speaking, we have seen rotations into small cap many times over the last year or so. And the short answer to your question is that historically speaking, it has not been particularly durable. Some of that comes down to the fact that interest rates coming down has been coming down at a lower rate, at a rate that's not as fast as the Fed cutting interest rates in terms of the 2-year and the 10-year rates. And that's been a part of driving factor of why small cap outperformance has not been particularly durable. Valuations long term is not particularly a good indicator of growth. So, those two things that that are currently driving small caps in the short run, historically speaking, unfortunately, have not been particularly durable. So we'll have to see whether or not that continues.
Insightful. Thank you. That's very appreciated. So let's shift gears, Tony, and get tactical. So based on what we've talked about so far, let's talk about the trade idea that you brought for us today. What opportunity are you seeing in the market right now?
Yeah, so with the potential of markets breaking out to new all-time highs, with clearly AI still being a very important part of potentially the driver of future growth, I want to take a look at a less known name in the AI infrastructure space called Akamai, which is clearly or which is quietly emerging as one of the more compelling names within the AI infrastructure space, especially as they've recently transformed their business over the last couple of years to focus on this area of the market. Because historically, Akamai is a content delivery network provider, which is much more and more of a commoditized business these days. But they've recently pivoted themselves to be a native edge cloud provider, specifically for providing compute on AI inference. So if you're using ChatGPT or Google Gemini, the ability for these firms to deliver performance results to you in a quick manner fashion requires these kind of edge delivery servers to have the compute power on these local servers. And that's really what Akamai has been focusing their company on. And it's finally starting to show up in the numbers. And the first place we can see it is by looking at the chart. If you look at the chart here for Akamai, it's recently spent the better half of this year kind of trading below the $82.5 resistance level, kind of range bound between 70 and 82.5. And just in the last month or so, the stock has broken out here above that trading range. And more importantly, after breaking out, the stock has pulled back to that $82.5 range and actually bounced higher. So confirming the breakout and that previous resistance level is now providing as support. And you also see that as it broke out, it's actually outperforming the S&P 500, which is a good sign on the breakout that there's potential durability of further upside from where we are. And we maintain an upside target of the previous highs or the previous 52-week high at around $102 here to the upside. But what I think is most compelling about Akamai here is that within the AI space, there's a lot of names trading at very, very rich valuations. But Akamai, being that they've recently transformed themselves from a company that really has nothing to do with AI to now being a potential leading provider of server needs for AI companies, that's really why the stock has continued at the moment to trade at a very low valuation of only 11 times forward earnings. I think a lot of analysts are still viewing this potentially as kind of the old business model that they have, and they haven't quite re-rated this stock to more of an AI cloud company. So the fact that the industry average is around 22 times forward earnings, Akamai is essentially trading at a 50% discount to the industry. Growth expectations for Akamai at the moment is not quite there yet with the rest of the industry. We're looking at top and bottom line growth that's in the 6 or 7% range versus the 9 to 11% we're seeing for the industry. So it is a little bit behind from a growth perspective, but it does excel from a profitability perspective already. So net net margins are already at 12%, operating margins around 31%. We've seen that margin expansion over the last couple of quarters, and that's a really good sign that, you know, this stock potentially in the next couple of quarters re-rate into an earnings multiple that makes more sense for the new business that they've kind of embarked on. So if you look at kind of their cloud business, they've been growing that part of the business nearly 40% year over year. So we're seeing a substantial amount of growth as they've transformed themselves into a edge cloud computing company. Operating margins, like I said, have expanded now to over 30%. And even their security businesses continue to see double-digit growth. So as they kind of transform their business, they've seen that margin expansion, they've seen the growth. And that's really where the disconnect in terms of value right now, I think, represents a really compelling opportunity for investors, especially since the new business, the security and the compute, now represents 60% of revenue. So the majority of revenue is now coming from this edge compute business that they've transformed into. And I think that's really why the stock deserves to be trading at a much higher multiple. So in terms of how I want to structure this, if you look at the IV percentile of Akamai right now, that sits at around 22%. So options are not particularly cheap, but they're also not very expensive. So I think the best way to take advantage of the current options volatility surface right now of Akamai is to use a call spread. And I'm going out to the January expiration, and I'm looking at buying the 85 by 95 call spread. What I'm doing here is I'm buying the January $85 calls. Earlier today, you can pay a little over $4 for that call option. But because those calls are relatively expensive, what I'm going to do is I'm going to sell the $95 calls against it and collect about 65 cents. And what that's going to bring down is my net cost of the strategy down to $3.40, which means that I'm risking a total of $340 per contract to potentially make $660 per contract if Akamai is above $95 by that January expiration, while risking $340 if Akamai is below $85 at that January expiration. So this gives me about a 2-to-1 risk to reward ratio, which gives me a favorable setup, especially since the stock has recently pulled back to that $85 support level. And it looks like it's starting to bounce off that level. And I think the risk reward ratio or this type of trade setup makes sense for the outlook that I have for Akamai.
Thank you for laying out that trade for us. And always curious about the practicality of trade management. So could you share with us some ways you would consider managing this trade as we go through January?
Yeah. Whenever it comes to trade management, I would say the downside management is more important than the upside management, meaning it's important to have very clear and black and white rules with regards to if this trade does not go in the direction that you expect it to, what do you do? And the rule of thumb here for a debit trade structure like this is to, if you lose 50% of the premium that you pay on the options trade, it's probably time to consider closing your trade and moving on. So in this particular case, if I'm paying $3.40 for this trade structure, if it loses 50% of that, which is $1.70, then it's time to cut your losses and move on. And instead of holding on to the trade and hoping that the trade moves back in your favor, it's better to save the rest of the $1.70 and apply it to the next trade rather than, like I said, holding on to this particular trade. Now, if the trade goes in my favor, generally speaking, as it approaches that $95 upper strike price, that's when I want to think about managing this particular trade and adjusting it. And when the trade goes in your favor, you have a lot more optionality as far as what you want to do then, whether you want to roll it, whether you want to add some exposure to it. There's a lot more things that you can do. And we will certainly try to keep you updated on these trades as it ages into January and show you how we are managing these trades on the show.
Yeah, that's helpful. So Tony, I want to go back to something you mentioned as you were presenting this trade idea. You referenced something called an IV percentile. Can you talk more about what this measure is and how traders can use it?
Yeah, absolutely. So IV percentile is a measure that helps you understand how cheap or expensive the options are relative to the range that it's traded in over the last 52 weeks. And it's looking at it from a percentile perspective. So when we say that the IV percentile is at 22%, that means 22% of the time the options premiums were cheaper than they were today. And roughly 78% of the time over the last year, options premiums were less expensive than where they were today. So this gives you a good sense for whether options are cheap or expensive. So 22% is not particularly, it's not very cheap. It is certainly on the lower end of the spectrum, but it's also not very, it's certainly not expensive. So this is really where it goes into factoring to determine which option strategy might make sense. And that's why I'm using a debit spread, because one, because it's on the relatively cheap side, I feel comfortable buying options. But at the same time, because it's not so cheap, I want to sell some options as well, bring a little bit of premium, and that's going to offset the cost of buying that call option. So IV percentile is just a good sense for, it gives you a good sense for how cheap or expensive an option is relative to the previous year.
That's helpful. Thank you. So I want to shift our conversation a little bit. We have upcoming earnings reporting on its way. Can you share with us what has your attention right now as far as current reporting that's going to be released soon?
Yeah, so we are starting to wrap up earnings season, but there are still quite a few big names that are yet to be reporting. Micron, I think, is an interesting one to take a look at this reporting next week because the stock continues to outperform both its peers and the broader market. And despite kind of the explosive expansion from AI-driven rally that we've seen here this year, we're talking about 100 plus rally just this year alone, Micron still trades at a very reasonable valuation of only 14 times forward earnings. And it joins, it continues to enjoy substantial margin expansion as it captures market share from Samsung. So this is really where, despite the strong rally we've seen, the outperformance heading into the earnings announcement next week leads me to believe that there is still room for this to grow here to the upside. So I'm maintaining a bullish stance going into earnings.
Thank you for that perspective. And so, one of the last things we like to do on the show is save some time in each of our conversations to look back at a trade idea, just like we talked about with the trade you just presented to us. We'd like to see how it plays out. And these moments really help us learn valuable lessons. So, today, Tony, I understand you're looking back at a previous trade with Meta. Would you update us on what's happened since your initial trade?
Yeah, so a few weeks ago, I laid out a bullish thesis here on Meta when it was trading at around $605. And at the time, we looked at buying the January 605, 675 call spread, and we paid around a little over $23 for that debit spread. That was a $70 wide debit spread. Now, the stock has rallied a fair amount since then. It hasn't quite reached our 675 level, but given the fact that this particular trade is up around 67% in terms of return on investment, I think it could be time to potentially close out the January leg of this particular trade. If we close that out, we would close it out around $39.20, which would be a gain of around 67%. But I think that because I believe that the thesis on Meta still remains intact, at least from a valuation perspective, it looks still quite compelling. It's still trading at around a 15% discount relative to its peers, even though it's expected to grow just as fast and is far more profitable than its peers. I think the upside potential still remains fairly sizable. And we've got, now that we've got the move here to the upside, it's pulled back a little bit. So I think that now could be the time to potentially extend this trade out and look at maybe buying the February expiration. You can pay about $28.55 earlier today. And what that allows you to do is to roll your profits from the first trade into this extension trade, which is going to give us more time. It recenters the trade and gives us a potential to shoot for filling this gap that, was created on the last earnings announcement. So if it does get back to that 740 level here by February expiration, if you combine the profits from the original trade into the risk to reward ratio of the new trade, you have what is a now a really compelling trade from a risk to reward perspective, because the total risk now with the new trade has a total downside risk of only $1,280, while the upside potential, if Meta is above 740 by February expiration, which is more than 2 months away, you're looking at over $7,200 in potential profits. So you have a really strong risk to reward ratio of nearly 4 to 1 on a trade that looks like that gives you upside potential on a stock that still looks very compelling from a valuation perspective.
Tony, this is a really robust example of trade management. Are there any other considerations that drove you to the decision to roll into February instead of closing the position out entirely?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, because the original trade actually expired in January, and we actually have more than a month left to go on that trade, and you know, it's up 67%, which is slightly below the typical threshold where we would typically manage trades like this. Usually, we start managing around 75%. But part of the reason that I wanted to manage this trade early was because of the Oracle earnings that we saw here just last night. It certainly is going to send some shockwaves around the AI investment community with regards to investors questioning the debt loads that companies are taking on to invest in AI infrastructure. Meta is no exception in that particular example of investors questioning whether or not the amount of debt that these companies are taking on to build that AI infrastructure will result in enough revenue to pay off that debt. So I think Oracle's results yesterday just gives you a sense for the amount of angst that investors have around this. And I think because of that, I would prefer to try to protect my profits to some degree while maintaining the longer term view here. Because when you think about valuations, you usually think about that playing out in the long run. In the short run, there could very much be some pockets of volatility then. So what this is really doing is protecting us against some of that short-term volatility by rolling the profits into a longer-term trade. It skews the risk reward far better in our favor, so that if Meta turns back around, we're risking a small percentage of our original trade, more less than half of what we were risking on the original trade, yet at the same time setting ourselves up for hitting a really nice home run if it does continue to rally into that February expiration.
Very helpful. Thank you so much, Tony. And to our viewers, this does bring our show to a close today. I want to thank you all for tuning in today. Tony, I really enjoyed our conversation. Thank you so much for bringing us your thoughts and your trade ideas.
Thank you so much, Roberta. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
You're most welcome. And if you're interested in further details specific to any of Tony's trade ideas shared with us today, you can join our midday market briefing, which will be held tomorrow. And you can do that by visiting fidelity.com/in-the-money-follow-up. Also, if you're looking for further insights or you missed the live show today, you can sign up for the Active Investor Weekly newsletter to receive a highlight of all the trades discussed today. And you can do that at fidelity.com/activeinvestorweekly. Next week, we'll be back with another episode of In the Money. Thank you and take care.
Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or, if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Options trading entails significant risk and is not appropriate for all investors. Certain complex option strategies carry additional risk. Before trading options, contact Fidelity Investments by calling 800-544-5115 to receive a copy of characteristics and risks of standardized options. Supporting documentation for any claims, if applicable, will be furnished upon request. There are additional costs associated with option strategies that call for multiple purchases and sales of options, such as spreads, straddles, and collars, as compared with a single option trade. Technical analysis focuses on market action, specifically volume and price. Technical analysis is only one approach to analyzing stocks. When considering which stocks to buy or sell, you should use the approach that you're most comfortable with. As with all of your investments, you must make your own determination as to whether an investment in any particular security or securities is right for you based on your investment objectives, risk tolerance, and financial situation. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Greeks are mathematical calculations used to determine the effect of various factors on options. Indexes are unmanaged. It is not possible to invest directly in an index. Views expressed are as of the date indicated, based on the information available at that time, and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of Options Play, and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. News, commentary, market data, and research reports are from third-party sources unaffiliated with Fidelity, unless otherwise noted, and are provided for informational purposes only. Fidelity does not endorse or adopt third-party content. Fidelity makes no guarantee that the information supplied is accurate, complete, or timely, and does not provide any warranties regarding results obtained from their use. Any screenshots, charts, or company trading symbols mentioned are provided for illustrative purposes only and should not be considered as an offer to sell, a solicitation of an offer to buy, or a recommendation for the security. Options Play and Fidelity Investments are independent entities and are not legally affiliated. The third-party trademarks appearing herein are the property of their respective owners. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC. Copyright 2024 FMR LLC. All rights reserved. 1109225.1.0. Information provided in the podcast is general in nature, is provided for informational purposes only, and should not be construed as investment or tax advice. Fidelity Investments disclaims any liability for any direct or incidental loss incurred by applying any of the information in this podcast. This podcast is intended for U.S. persons only and is not a solicitation for any Fidelity product or service. This podcast is provided for your personal non-commercial use and is the copyrighted work of FMR LLC. You may not reproduce this podcast in whole or in part in any form without the permission of FMR LLC.